panel speaker for this session is Mike Yarrow, taking the perspective of others to become human.
Okay. Hi. My name is Mike Yo. Title of my talk is Taking the Perspective of Others to Be Human. Sorry, this is doing funky things on me. Okay. So I'd like to revisit the theme of the conference, as has been done many, many times, but I'd like to do it just one more time. So what is a human? What does it mean to be human? And this really doesn't like me. And flourishing as a human, so the argument I want to make is that flourishing as a human requires supporting the flourishing of our neighbor. I'd like to begin with just to provide an overview. I'm going to spend just a little bit of time introducing myself because, frankly, before I came to this conference, I knew a grand total of zero people here. In the last 24 hours, though, I've met Esther, my birdwalk friend, and Matthew, my breakfast friend. So, there's still others. So I'll just do that real quickly. Go over what is empathy, or ask the questions, what is empathy? Is it a sin? And I need to see if I can keep it from jumping ahead. I'll talk a little bit about social perspective taking, which I'll argue is a part of what it means to be empathetic. I'll provide a theoretical framework for that, and then I'll talk a little bit about my own work in social perspective taking in the classroom. So me, your presenter. Okay, so I was raised in a mainline denomination, and wow, this is just flying through my... Okay, I am clearly not adept at PowerPoints. Thought I was, but I am clearly not. I attended an evangelical college. Actually, it was a Nazarene university. But one of the ones without a beach, where I had a 180 degree conversion experience. I'm a social scientist with an interest in application. So my degree is in educational psychology. I'm employed at a large public university, and probably most importantly, I'm nervous. So this is my first ASA, and it's been a while since I've actually presented anything face-to-face. I did have a poster presentation at another conference earlier this week, and I was sent to a Zoom room to talk about my poster, and I had a grand total of one person there. So the fact that there's a few more of you here is amping that up a little bit, but that's okay. So I wanted to provide a little bit of context for my talk. So about a year ago, I was directed to an article in Christianity Today that talked about several pastors at a large church in Minneapolis who resigned after being accused of the sin of empathy. I know, right? Right? Me too. So the problem there, the idea was that joining in others in their pain can result in a loss of self. So yes, this is my reaction, as was yours, right? Like, what? So it raised some questions. First, what is empathy? And I studied that a little bit, so I kind of know the answer to that one. But how are they thinking about it? Is it a sin? And why do we not hear about the sin of delight or the sin of joy? But the sin of empathy, it was just kind of confusing to me. And what do we make of John 11:35? Right, Jesus wept. A passage where Jesus clearly is displaying empathy. So to answer that first question, what is empathy? It's a response, the responses of one individual to the experiences of another. So sharing the experiences of another, we typically think of this as sharing in the unfortunate or traumatic experience of another, but it doesn't actually have to be. It conceptually differs from sympathy in that it requires more intention from the observer. And it's considered a developmental milestone by Piaget. So if you've taken Psych 101, you've been introduced to Piaget. So it's this idea of, kind of being able to step outside of myself, recognizing that the teddy bear that comforts me is not going to comfort my friend whose crayon was just stolen. That recognition, that's a milestone, being able to center. And it's a process that entails both affective or feeling and cognitive components. And I'll return to that in just a bit. So is it a sin? So to answer this question, thought I'd look at, some of the commandments and specifically what Jesus had to say about that. So in the Synoptic Gospels, he talked about loving your neighbor as yourself. In Luke, he was actually asked, who is my neighbor? and he's asked by an expert in the law. So, so our physical neighbors, we know, right? Or we should know. I know a few of my neighbors. I guess I don't know all of them, but especially back in that day, we would have known our neighbors. Probably everybody in the village, we probably would have grown up with them. But in the example of the Good Samaritan, which follows which is Jesus's answer to this question, you know, the Samaritan was expressing love and meeting the physical needs of the victim, presumed to be a Jew. Part of the intent, I believe, was to select someone who would not have been a physical neighbor. So I suspect that Jesus intentionally responded with a cross-cultural example. I think that's kind of important. Question two, what does it mean to love? I use this question as an excuse to read some C.S. Lewis because I somehow had never read The Four Loves. I don't know how I got through life without having read that, but I used that as an excuse. And in The Four Loves, C.S. Lewis describes three love cravings. Sometimes he calls these love impulses. I like to think of them as love valences. They are need love, gift love, and appreciation love. So he tends to use examples and illustrations rather than technical definitions, given the audience of, you know, he was often writing to, because technical definitions would probably put a lot of his audience to sleep, and he was awesome, so he knew not to do that. And I just love this image because I think that kind of captures all three of those love valences. But need love, he gave the example of it's that which sends a lonely or frightened child to its mother's arms. And it's not bad. It's, you know, we're wired for need love, right? Gift love, godlike, longs to give joy to others. And appreciation love, which is giving thanks. I highly suspect that probably when you've set foot on this campus, you've experienced that appreciation love and just being at a conference like this, probably you've experienced that appreciation love. If you haven't, there's plenty of windows in this room. But I think empathy, the sharing in the experience of another, is a way in which it's a way to practice gift love to fulfill the need love of others. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that. So in terms of empathy and sin, what can we conclude? Well, empathy appears to be an important pathway to getting to know my neighbor to better meet their needs, both physical and psychological, and I'll talk a little bit about that. In other words, it seems that empathy can be an act of love in accord with what it means to be an image bearer or fully human. So let's take a closer look at empathy. So Davis describes empathy as a multi-dimensional process consisting of antecedents, processes, intrapersonal and interpersonal outcomes. So antecedents, those include the person, their learning histories, individual differences, the situation includes the similarity maybe between me and the person I'm empathizing with, also maybe the salience of the situation. So is it kind of minor or is it pretty traumatic under the experience, like a race-based traumatic event? Processes include non-cognitive, so for example, neuromimicry, simple cognitive, so for example, classical conditioning, and advanced cognitive, which I'll talk a little bit more about in a bit. So those intrapersonal outcomes, so that could be like the affect, right? The affective outcomes, like how it's going to make me feel, but also the non-affective outcomes as well. So the attributions I'm making about the trauma that the other person's experiencing, right? So am I making the attribution, well, they kind of got what they deserve. They shouldn't have been in that situation to begin with. I think we heard a little bit of that with Dr. Thank you, Dr. Joshua, earlier, right, with some of the reactions to the Michael Brown tragedy in 2014. And then also interpersonal outcomes. And you can see how those intrapersonal outcomes are going to impact the interpersonal outcomes, right? So am I going to respond in helping the person in need, or am I going to respond in other ways that might be a little bit more destructive, for example, dissociating, blaming, et cetera? And I'm going to be focusing on those advanced cognitive processes, specifically social perspective taking. So sometimes we just simply refer to this as role taking, as does Davis, one of those components of empathy. To better define it, it's the capacity to discern the thoughts, feelings, and motives of others. And Is it related to human flourishing? Well, maybe, because it's associated with a whole host of positive outcomes. A few here are decreased likelihood to employ stereotypes, openness to diversity, my neighbor, in other words, increased likeliness or likelihood of developing positive relationships with whom we may differ. So the theoretical framework I like to kind of think about all this stuff in is self-determination theory, which provides a frame for understanding our innate propensity for growth and flourishing. It posits that human beings, in addition to physical needs, actually have psychological needs as well. And they include the need for relatedness or belonging, the need for competence, and the need for autonomy. So in the Good Samaritan story, you know, that really centers upon meeting the physical needs of the traveler. But there's robust evidence that we also have these psychological needs. And like the need for safety and hunger, we're going to be motivated to meet these needs. We're going to seek out ways to meet them. Another explanation this theory provides is that environments can be can support or thwart these needs. Do I live in a food desert, for example, if we're talking about hunger, or do I live next to like the neighborhood grocer? Similarly, educational, and again, I'm an educational psychologist, but educational environments and other environments can also thwart or support these needs. So in educational context, need supportive teaching is also associated with a whole host of positive outcomes, including student motivation, should say student outcomes, student motivation, engagement, development, learning, performance, and psychological well-being. So in terms of need supportive teaching, social perspective taking is a characteristic of need supportive teaching. So our research team was asking some questions. So for example, if this is so good, like, so how easy is it for teachers to take the perspective of their students, especially because teachers are human beings, which means that they're prey to some of the same biases that we're all often succumb to. They may hold maladaptive beliefs about certain groups of students, make snap judgments, lack confidence in teaching students who differ from them. We haven't answered this question yet. We're still kind of working on it, but we also were interested in simply putting forth effort make a difference, right? So when we talk about social perspective taking, we can talk about accuracy. Am I accurate when I'm doing it, or am I way off target? But if I'm way off target, does actually making the effort to do that, does that make a difference? So I'm going to describe two studies briefly, but the purpose of our first study was to examine the relationship between the value of social perspective taking and self-efficacy in those preparing to be teachers. So in our study, there were 184 undergrads enrolled in EdSite courses. They completed surveys at two time points. So one of these measures was the social perspective taking importance measure. So taps into the value that we place on social perspective taking. But then we also use the propensity for social perspective taking. So how likely are we to take the perspective of others? And then teacher sense of efficacy, we're really interested in the relationship with this as well. So teacher sense of efficacy is basically my belief in my capability to teach even challenging students. It's also associated with a whole host of positive. It's a good thing if it's somewhat calibrated, if summer reflects your actual teaching ability, then it's a good thing for teachers to have. But we also collected interview data as well. So we used participant responses on the propensity scale, looked at the upper and lower quartiles, invited them for interviews and looked at the data that they provided. And I'll get to those in a bit. But in terms of our survey results, we found that those who placed value on social perspective taking at the beginning of the semester, predicted they're likely to actually engage in social perspective taking towards the end of the semester. Also, these were more confident teachers at the end of the semester. In terms of our interview response results, we were interested in the strategies these two groups identified, right? So both groups reported strategies that included observation or explicit engagement. So I'm observing the student, how do they look today? Or maybe I'm just directly asking them, how are you feeling today? You don't look so hot. Drawing upon one's own experience, like, so for example, maybe I'm in St. Louis, which was, you know, example, or in, you know, around the time Michael Brown's, and it causes me anxiety. Maybe I'm assuming my students do that too. I'm not really looking at them, but I'm just assuming or drawing upon my own feelings to make assumptions about how they're feeling or to take their perspective, their presumed perspective, and structuring environments. However, those high-end social perspective takes, so they did differ a bit, those two groups. They reported creating safe environments for students to share their thoughts or feelings. So creating that fertile ground for students to share, whereas those in the low group just wanted to maybe create environments to actually observe students. So like in this environment, maybe if people are sitting behind one another, I'm going to structure it so that I can actually see them. But in the high group, I'm actually going to kind of create a safe environment so they feel like they can share. Those in the high group also reported using a broader array of strategies, not just simply, not just one. We also were interested in the sources of social perspective taking. So both groups listed the student as a direct source. That's kind of a, you know, kind of a given. But typically those in the low group, that's all, that's kind of where they stopped. Whereas those in the high group were also looking at indirect sources, such as an awareness of how present circumstances may play a role in how students are feeling, including the culture of the background, maybe a mismatch between the student's culture and that of the school. And we were also interested in benefit. We're actually interested in more things, but this is what I'm sharing. How they felt, whether they felt there were benefits to social perspective taking or not. Both groups felt that there were benefits that include student learning, instruction, improved teacher-student relationships. But in general, those in high social perspective taking in that category, they tended to emphasize benefits for students, while those in the low category kind of emphasized how it benefits them as a teacher. Like it helps me lesson plan because I know students, I know where kind of where they're at. I can plan my lessons accordingly, et cetera. So to summarize that study, those who place value on taking the perspective of others are more likely to do so and are more confident in their ability to teach. They're inclined to see the value in creating learning environments in which it is safe to share, and they're more likely to utilize a wider variety of strategies and to draw upon more sources of information. They're also more likely to see perspective taking as a way to support their students, not just to make their job easier. So in our second study, we kind of flipped this a little bit. So instead of looking at supporting or taking the perspective of students, we're interested in meeting those psychological needs that I referred to earlier, right? So need for relatedness, competence, autonomy. And whether that puts students in a place where they can take the perspective of others. So in this study, we had 405 undergrads enrolled in courses that are fulfilling university multicultural requirements. This was entirely surveys that we collected survey data and only at one time point. But again, we were using the social perspective taking importance questionnaire, also the learning climate questionnaire, which measures perceptions of students, their perceptions about their teacher in the classrooms, right? So a sample item might be, I feel understood by my instructor. We also use the basic psychological needs scale, so somewhat similar, which I'll kind of gloss over in the interest of time. And the cultural openness and desire to learn, which is a subscale of the everyday multicultural competence scale. So it taps interest in other cultures. So a sample item includes, I think it's important to be educated about cultures and countries other than my own. And then finally, we're ultimately interested in transformational learning. So we use that scale. So transformational learning is not just taking what you're learning outside of the classroom, actually trying to apply it to your life, basically learning that makes a difference, learning that makes a change. So a sample item includes, when my parents ask about school, I talk with them about what I'm learning in this class. So the results here, and this is just an extremely simplified model, but we did find a relationship between that, the perceptions of the learning climate and the importance that students place on social perspective taking. And that was directly related to culture openness, which was then related to transformational learning. So the summary of what we found, meeting students' psychological needs positions them to take the perspective of others, and taking the perspective of others is associated with valuing learning about my neighbor, and this is associated with transformational learning. So in conclusion, revisiting the theme, so what does that mean to be human? Perhaps in part, it means supporting the flourishing of our neighbor, and seeking their perspective seems to be a good starting point. Perspective taking could be an act of love and meeting the needs of others and supporting them and leading the good life. We found that valuing social perspective taking makes one a more competent student-centered teacher. Results in students flipping through their PowerPoint slides way too soon. That's not true. But results in students being more open to learning about their neighbor. And this openness can lead to transformational or growth experiences. So here is my thank you so much. References, if you just, I'll feel free, come up to me and give me your email address and I'll send those. And again, thank you.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the notion in the CT article about empathy being a sin, and the criticism was actually that people were willing to embrace extra-biblical synchronistic ideas in order to embrace empathy for people that they felt were being abused in some fashion. And I think that it's a pretty solid argument that that could be construed as a sin. I don't think they were saying that empathy is a global way of being is sinful.
So fair enough. And actually, thank you for bringing that up. So there's a bit more nuance in that article than I was able to describe, in my talk, or that I chose, I guess, not to describe or maybe to gloss over. I agree. I think it's a little bit more nuanced. I think my concern, though, is when calling empathy a sin, which is, what happened, and then the nuance was provided a little bit afterwards. But I think when you, in doing that, I have a lot of concerns. I think like when you hear that, that's where you stop, right? And I think especially with the nuance that came after that, it was, I'm going to go down this rabbit hole. I'm going to kind of lose myself because I'm going to maybe indulge in behaviors or other things that are kind of a part of, what the other is, the object or the object of my empathy. I'm going to kind of maybe buy into that uncritically, but I guess I would argue that I need to first take the perspective of the other, then, because if social perspective taking is discerning the thoughts, feelings, and motives of the other, I need to do that first to kind of find out where they're at. I think using or just calling that a sin and then kind of leaving it at that again, not that they were doing that, it was a little bit more nuanced, but I think my concern is that you hear that and that puts you in a place to other the person, to not get to know them, to not get to know my neighbor. I think that's my concern with that. But thank you for that, because that is a little bit of nuance that I kind of glossed over for the sake of my argument. Yeah.
All right, all the questions are on this side of the room. All the way back.
Thank you for the presentation and the study. It's really fascinating. It's interesting because the CT article talks about the catchphrase that kind of sum this in, empathy is a sin. But then you have developmental psychologist Paul Bloom at Yale writing a book called Against Empathy, The Case for Rational Compassion, where he makes an argument that empathy is like a spotlight that is driven by our emotions, so that we empathize with people who are already like us, ignoring injustices outside of our biased, emotionally driven spotlight. Mm-hmm. So he is making an argument against empathy so that we can override these emotional biases. And there's some other experimental work that shows that perspective taking can backfire if we've already othered the other person because they're outside of the spotlight. Yeah. So I'm curious to hear you talk about that in light of these student teachers and perspective taking, even if you're just like, I'm out here, I'm not asking for what your data says, but what do you think the possibilities of reconciling these different ideas about empathy are?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you. Yeah. So I guess my response is, why did I focus on, if empathy is a multidimensional process, why am I focusing on social perspective taking? And I agree. It's not a silver bullet. There are issues with that as well, but I think, and again, like in educational psychology, right? So we're interested in educational contexts. And I think early on when I was investigating this, I was looking at teachers that were, or teacher education programs that were structuring perspective, or what were considered perspective taking experiences, like, right? So like actually the And we do this in church a lot too, right? Where we have a mission trip and it's short term and it reinforces those stereotypes maybe that we had. And our situation's not like that. It kind of creates this othering. And I think one of the places where I got to in reading this is that emotional component. That's what could go either way, right? So if I'm feeling discomfort, see Daniel Bates, and I know this is like going back quite a bit, but with the empathy altruism hypothesis, right? So like if I'm feeling, if I'm feeling discomfort, how am I going to deal with that, right? So there's that can go many different ways. It could go with me dissociating myself, from the victim, and there's several different ways that can go, right? It's their fault, all these, personal attributions that I'm making to the person I'm kind of empathizing with, or am I actually going to respond in helping, not just to reduce my, because it makes me feel better, but to actually serve them, right, and to reduce their stress. And so I think I came away from those studies really interested in just the cognitive component. And it's not a silver bullet, and we're still working on that. But some of our data is promising.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, question in the second room.
So also I understand from that study with this competitors, you can have short, you said short-sighted empathy, which could lead to bad things. But part of what I got from what you were talking about, correct me if I'm wrong, is in some studies I did a couple years ago, we used perspective taking as a precursor for empathy for compassion, to try and elicit compassion. So if perspective taking is an essential part of compassion, isn't compassion a virtue? And isn't that, didn't Jesus have compassion? Isn't that what we're supposed to emulate?
Yes. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I think that's kind of if we're talking about flourishing as a human, right? Yeah, I would totally agree with that. I think that it can go a bunch of different ways, but I think, yeah, we're talking about what does it mean to be a human?
All right, we have one more question. So, wondering with the social perspective, many of us are faculty here, right? But it also just applies for us to witness to other faculty. That is, I come from a large secular university where everybody's building their own kingdoms, and I think just understanding their perspectives and trying to serve them, nominating them for awards, helping them with funding. Is that a social perspective, taking not just to help student teaching, but to help our witness to other non-believing faculty?
Oh, absolutely. I think so. Yeah, I find myself doing that as well. So this faculty member is really grumpy with me, trying to figure out why that is, right? What was it? And I think that puts me in a place of reflection, right? Looking at my behaviors in terms of their position as well, right? So I think so. I mean, I'm very much
of the department, right? And the university. So.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.